You're listening to episode 198 of Women Worldwide. We're talking about fibroids. Do you know what they are? Do you know anyone who has them? And do you even know where to go to get information about them? Stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Our network is going strong with so many passionate stories of the women and men who come on this show. Thank you for helping to power up their voices. You're fueling their efforts and also helping them to make a difference in this world. All right, well, let's get to today's topic and special guest. What do you know about fibroids? Do you know anyone who has them? Have you even heard of them before? And maybe do you suffer from them yourself? Well, joining me on the show is Sateria Venable, who is a social entrepreneur. She's also an architect, an author, and the founder and CEO of the Fibroid Foundation. Sateria founded the foundation about 5 years ago to educate women and to support initiatives to find a cure for fibroids. Although she doesn't have a medical background, she has a deep knowledge of fibroids, and she's here to share her journey with you. Sateria, it is great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're really happy to have you here because sometimes you hear about fibroids, but we don't have all the information, the statistics. And I find it really interesting. You know, I mentioned that you're an architect, right? And you don't have a medical background.
That is true.
So how did you actually transition to social entrepreneur and the launch of the Fibroid Foundation?
You know what? It's really interesting. I always say that life really takes you on some journeys that you truly do not anticipate. And this is an example of that exactly. I was diagnosed with uterine fibroids in my 20s. And this personal, challenging health experience is what has brought me here. I think that the title social entrepreneur is really who I am at heart. And so when I was diagnosed and I was not finding the solutions that I needed nor the care providers that I needed, I kind of put my problem solving hat on and tried to find solutions to what I was experiencing. And actually, in addition to really kind of vetting out care providers, one of the first things I did was leaning on that architectural experience was I actually patented an undergarment for women with heavy flow issues. So I went into design mode first, which is kind of
interesting.
And then at the same time, I began speaking with women about uterine fibroids. And really, at first, they were just casual conversations. But you know, when you're diagnosed, you don't. A lot of women, which I've found that I wasn't the only one, don't even know what fibroids are. So when I started speaking with women, I had no idea how many women it affected. And so out of that experience, when I started to learn more about how broad a reach this health concern has, that's when I started thinking about a blog and then a nonprofit. And it kind of, everything just kind of took off from there. But the origins were really in just trying to find some personal comfort and health and trying to solve a problem.
Now, did you know what fibroids were when you were diagnosed? Was that something that you had heard about? Because you mentioned that, you know, speaking with other women, some didn't even know.
I did not. And it's interesting, I've also learned that many women come from families where they've seen their female family members have experienced heavy menstrual bleeding, but the word fibroid is never discussed, or it's just unknown, really. And, you know, generationally, you just cope with the symptoms and kind of try to keep them at bay, usually resulting in a hysterectomy, but the word fibroid was never discussed in my household, so that when I was diagnosed with it at 20, 25, 26, I had never heard of it.
So you also said that you did research, and I'm wondering, were there any things that came out of your research, statistics that shocked you, anything you want to let Women Worldwide listeners know?
Absolutely. You really touched on something that's pivotal, because given the statistics of this health concern, it really inspires me daily to make sure that we're educating the public about the broad reach. 70% of all women will develop fibroids to some degree in their lifetime. Now, not all of those are symptomatic, but many of them are. And in the African-American community, or women of African descent, I should say, 80% of women have fibroids. Can you imagine?
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. And what's even more interesting is fibroids really display differently in every woman based on ethnicity and other factors. And that's why they've been so challenging to diagnose and treat. And the annual healthcare costs are another huge statistic, which the annual healthcare costs just in the U.S. reach well into the billions, and they fluctuate year to year anywhere between 7 to 9, all the way up to in the high teens, early $20 billion a year in healthcare costs, which is unreal. And this is all due to fibroids. And as I mentioned before, a lot of women receive a hysterectomy as a result of fibroids, and half of the hysterectomies annually in the United States are due to uterine fibroids, which is a statistic that many women, or many people, I'm sure, aren't aware of. And it's a red flag as to, no pun intended, as to the huge issue that we have here with this health diagnosis.
Well, the statistics are absolutely alarming. I'm just wondering, Sotiria, I don't know if you can answer this question, but is there a way to prevent getting fibroids? I know you said that they show up in different ways in women, and also based on ethnicities. So could you ever prevent them?
I have not come across any research or any information on preventing them, but I personally have found ways to slow their growth. And fibroids are triggered by hormonal surges. We do know that. And what we don't know is why in some women those hormonal surges are inconsequential and don't affect their periods. But in women like me, who do have experience the growth of fibroids as a result of these hormonal surges, reducing your hormonal intake can, in some instances, slow their growth. And so I've used myself as a test case in many instances. And one of those was becoming a pescatarian for 7 years, because I so did not want to have surgery number four. After surgery number three, I said, I'm not having another surgery. And so I'm changing my diet. So I can, and the surgery was very taxing. It was an abdominal myomectomy. So in an abdominal myomectomy, now there are robotic ones where your uterus is not removed from your body. But at that time, I had an incision. Your uterus is lifted out of your body. The fibroids are cut out. Your uterus is sewn back together. So the uterus is a muscle, and it will grow back together. And then your uterus is reinserted into your body.
And that's an invasive surgery.
Oh my goodness. And so you have an incision, you have the severe pain, and it takes anywhere from 8 weeks to several months to heal. And so most of the time my fibroids grew back in under a year.
I was just
going to
ask that question.
Where
that was my next question. Do they grow back?
Oh. Yes, they do. So I experienced their regrowth in under a year after every surgery. But after the third surgery, when I was able to change my diet and eliminate hormones, the period between those two surgeries was 7 years, as opposed to, you know, 1 or 2 or 1 or 3 years.
So there was a shift there, definitely.
There was.
You know, your foundation reaches women worldwide. How are you helping to educate women in other countries about fibroids who have different circumstances, different cultures? You know, what are their choices?
Sure, and that's a great question. So we do a lot of education via social media. We are fortunate enough to have an advisory board of 9 really stellar medical professionals from medical centers around the country. And these men and women are fibroid specialists with a lot of expertise, and they help us to provide content to our audience, which is now over 11,000 women and men on Facebook in 71 countries. The other way that we educate is through fibroid talks. So when we are launching chapters in various cities, and we work with our chapter presidents and ambassadors to create a fibroid talk in each city, because you'd be surprised that women aren't aware of the specialist who's in their immediate community who can treat them.
Sure.
So this is an opportunity for women to speak with a professional whom we've vetted, that we know is really a good, skilled, and knowledgeable professional who can treat them successfully with their fibroids, where they can ask questions, learn about the latest treatment options, and have some fun too. So, you know, our sisterhood is really important. So we try to create a really warm environment where we can have like a social component when we meet. So those are the ways that we meet women. But you brought up a really good point of, since we are global and we do communicate with women around the world, one of the most frustrating parts of my job is interacting with women whom we do not yet have a way to support. They could be in an area of the world where there aren't any fibroid specialists. They aren't even in touch with a general practitioner. Folks may not be knowledgeable. The medical professionals in their community may not be knowledgeable with the latest treatment options. And so that is a topic that is on my radar screen to try to slowly, hopefully, make a difference in. We want to be able to be a tangible presence on the ground in various communities to be able to bring women the support that they need for uterine fibroids. And that's an evolving concern of mine.
Yeah, I could see why that's a big concern. I would imagine that having the tangible presence makes the work, I don't want to say more effective, but people more understanding, compliant in what they need to do, or figuring out ways that they can get help. You know, it's one thing to see something online versus having a professional in front of you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I agree.
So that is definitely a challenge. Do you feel, I mean, being trained architect, moved to social entrepreneur, that you face other challenges as well in your work as a social entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think that, you know, becoming a social entrepreneur has been a huge leap for me. I think had I had college to do over again, I would have gone the social entrepreneur route, but that really wasn't a buzzword when I went to college. And, you know, coming from my beginnings, following your passion or your bliss was not something
<That's right. laughs>
that was necessarily supported or encouraged. And so I tried to go into a field that fit many of my interests, but, you know, didn't really encompass everything like the title Social Entrepreneur does.
And I think you're a builder. You're absolutely a builder. Look at what you're building.
And I, you know, I think the challenge is always making that vision a reality. And what I've found is that I think that much of our passion kind of materializes in the world when we become focused. That's what I've learned. And so in order to overcome some of the challenges of being a social entrepreneur, I had to believe it first and then see it second. And so while I was working full time doing other things and my focus was pulled in many other different directions, this particular endeavor and passion was not growing. But once I had an opportunity to stop and focus, which took many years because I've been advocating for 11 years. And so I think it's a lot, it's a testament to personal growth.
Right.
Yeah. To be able to experience the professional growth.
Interesting. I'm curious about your thoughts on Eastern philosophy versus Western and medicine when it comes to fibroid help and care. How do you sort of square that?
That's a phenomenal question because I don't get that question very often, Deirdre. And it's interesting because that blend of Eastern and Western medicine has also taken me on different paths. I read when I was really suffering really badly with uterine fibroids that a woman treated herself by doing Reiki. Mm-hmm. And so I'd never heard of Reiki, another new word. And so I went to see a Reiki specialist.
Can you explain Reiki for listeners might not know what it is?
Sure. So Reiki is energy healing with your hands. And I always, when I explain Reiki, I share with folks that I believe that many faith systems in the world also believe in the power of touch, and that this is the word that is used in an Indian-based philosophy, but that I think that it's definitely universal. Anyone can do it. And it's the focus of intention with healing. So you lay your hands on the chakras in your body, which are the energy centers in your body, and you focus the energy healing through your hands, and your hands become very warm. And it's an intuitive process where you learn to follow the hot and cold energy fields around the body and place your hands intuitively where they need to go for healing. And so I reached out to a Reiki master in the Chicago suburbs and went to see her. And she treated me, and I didn't have any fibroid symptoms for a month and a half, and I was a believer. That made me a believer.
Sure.
And so she's also her name is Annette. She is also a Reiki master and teacher. So I went to her for Reiki certification level one. So as a result of my fibroid experience, I am a Reiki practitioner. So I've definitely become, you know, very a proponent of that healing modality. And I've used Chinese medicine, which has been very beneficial for me. I also add the caveat that you have to be under the care of someone who is knowledgeable in Chinese medicine, because some of the Chinese herbs can be very hard on the liver, and you don't want to take any chances with that.
No, definitely not.
The third modality that I've utilized is naturopathy, and it's naprapathy, and it's a whole body alignment. And I have a friend in Chicago, Dr. Lynn Pittman. She's a DO as well as a naturopathy specialist, and she adjusted my entire body and reduced my bleeding by like 75-80%.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's a temporary adjustment because once your spine compresses, the heavy menstrual bleeding can continue. But once I learned how to manage my spinal health with yoga and naturopathy, I can alleviate my bleeding symptoms drastically with this knowledge. So Eastern medicine helped me tremendously to find a lot of comfort. It's important for women to know that oftentimes when you're experiencing heavy menstrual bleeding, you may be in a crisis state. You may have very low hemoglobin, be very anemic. And when you are experiencing that, you may need a medical intervention, because I've had a transfusion before. After a surgery, I had a hemoglobin of 5.4. It's supposed to be a 12. And so, you know, while Eastern medicine is amazing, I think you have to really approach everything with an open mind, open eyes, and take the step that is best for you at the time. Because the reality is that sometimes a holistic modality may take a little bit longer to take effect. And I don't want you to be in a dangerous state if you are in need of a medical intervention, which is Western medicine. I hope that makes sense. I know that was a mouthful.
It makes a lot of sense. You're balancing the Eastern with the Western, and it's so important to know that you can rely on certain philosophies, Eastern, which you do. You mentioned, you know, the Chinese medicine, the Reiki, the naturopathy, but when it's time for Western to step in, you also need that as well. So, Soteria, this is all excellent information. I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts just for a moment.
Okay.
I actually want to take a little bit of time to chat about our sponsor, PrepDish. So I'm going to ask you, have you ever heard of PrepDish before?
I have. And I'm excited to learn more. I definitely can see myself using PrepDish. Much needed.
Oh my gosh. Well, I certainly love to hear that. And I'm sure PrepDish will appreciate that too. So for all the listeners out there who maybe haven't checked out PrepDish or haven't even heard about PrepDish, they're a subscription-based meal planning service that really saves you time. It helps you make your dinners much more appealing. Definitely did for mine, and made them more delicious too. For me, PrepDish removes this question from the dinner hour. It's that, what are we going to have for dinner? And that would happen at 5 o'clock almost every weeknight. And then I would also hear the comment, oh no, not that again. So if you're wondering how PrepDish works, let me tell you. Every week you receive a weekly meal plan with a grocery list, and you really know upfront all of the ingredients and everything that you need to prep for the week. So after you go shopping, you would set aside 2 or 3 hours to prepare everything in advance. And I prep on Sundays, which sets me up for an entire week of meals. And this really helps. There are two dishes that just stick out on the super fast menu that I really like. It's the kale salad with pomegranate and avocado. And also there's a sausage and sauteed bell peppers over rice dish that is so quick and easy to make. And everybody just loved it. But just a note to my vegetarian vegan friends, I do substitute out the meat sausage for a soy or vegetarian product. But you know what? Check this out. Check out some of the other recipes. I'm sure you're going to find many delicious dishes. So if you think about it, your meals just got really easy. Mine did, because I am saving time, which is a super precious commodity as we're headed into the holidays. We're really in the holiday season. And I have a crazy schedule just like you. So I let PrepDish do the planning for me. And the best part is that PrepDish is offering a really fantastic offer for Women Worldwide listeners. You can go to PrepDish.com/worldwide and get 2 weeks of PrepDish for free. So try it. I know you're going to love it. PrepDish.com/worldwide. And I'm really excited for listeners to try PrepDish because it's so easy. All right, let's dive back into our discussion. So, Sotiria, you were just really educating us on the statistics of fibroid, some of the challenges as a social entrepreneur. And I love the Eastern, you know, the Eastern philosophies that you're using, as well as, you know, when you need Western medicine to jump in. Now, as the founder of the Fibroid Foundation, how would you describe yourself as an entrepreneur? And maybe you could also just comment on how your entrepreneurial spirit has led you to start other endeavors as well.
Sure. So that's a good question. It's always interesting to be asked to describe yourself, but I'm hoping that I try to be caring and inclusive, and I'm definitely passionate. And I hope that that is something that's palpable with our team. Our team is growing slowly. So a year ago, I made the leap from managing the foundation as well as a full-time job. So really two full-time jobs to solely the foundation. And our team has grown to three people. And so my goal, I realized that when I was blogging, when we were developing our messaging, that it was important for us to also incorporate the healthy practices into our work environment that we encourage women to incorporate into their environments as well. So to that end, we focus on self-care and being a whole, you know, wholeness. Wholeness is defined in a very personal way, but whatever makes you feel energetic and fulfilled at the end of the day. And so those are the mantras that we share and try to incorporate. And I ask for input from our team. I think that's important to make it a group effort and to make sure that everyone is happy in their workplace. And I really strive to create an environment that is maybe some, an environment that I may have wished for in careers past. I've had some challenging work environments. And so I guess I try to look at that as motivation to create something that is wonderful, that is inspiring, and that makes folks happy to participate and to be here.
Well, it certainly shows in your brand, the caring, the inclusive, and the passion. I don't think there's enough self-care. Certainly, there aren't as many workplaces as you would like that would have such a focus. So I can only imagine that it's greatly appreciated by your employees. And congratulations on your growth. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much. It's been just wonderful. I mean, the many years of work that kind of built up to being able to experience this time of growth and outreach is just really gratifying to see. When you start off on this journey, you don't always know where you'll land, and for us to be here now is just really wonderful, and I'm tremendously grateful for this experience.
Well, with growth says that you must be capitalizing on some strengths, right? So I'm just wondering, what do you think are some of your greatest strengths, and where do you look to others when you need support?
Sure. Well, I think compassion is one of my greatest strengths. I've always been really sensitive to the plight of others. And I think that focus or that concern is always front of mind and drives many of my interests and activities. I'm also very driven, which can be a good thing and a bad thing.
Yes. It's a bad thing when you get burned out.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully we're leaning now toward more of the good than the bad. But to your point, balance is always key. And in terms of support, I have been fortunate enough to develop a really fantastic network of fellow founders, and we call each other frequently to share best practices and give each other support, and just, we're a sounding board for one another. And then I'd say my other support centers are definitely my family, who have always been very supportive. My mom's 86.
Oh, goodness.
She's always been my rah-rah section. And always let me do whatever came to mind without, even when she didn't understand it, she just, you know, she let me be me. And I am very unselfishly so. And I'm just very grateful for her mothering with that perspective. And then I'd say my spiritual center has been really, really key as to balance and support.
Excellent. Now a tougher question. Funding, right? So here you are with a foundation. When it comes to pursuing the funding part, any tips that you can give to other professionals about their outreach, raising money for a really great cause? How do you do it?
Sure. Yeah. This is, oh my goodness. It's definitely something that takes a lot of effort. I think that the thing that has really helped me the most is networking. You know, people like to interact with people and they want to know who they're giving to and where their funds are going. And it's really important to develop that network, which is a constantly evolving process. And it requires really strategic efforts on the part of the organization. And it's a constant effort. If there were one thing that if I could name one thing that might keep me up at night, it's funding. You try to develop the relationships. You try to make sure that your physician partners see the value in what you're doing and that they'll want to personally continue to support your efforts. And so it's a constant, focus of ours to find new and creative ways to develop funding. And we just completed Giving Tuesday. And so that was a whole effort to get some messaging out during that time and capitalize on the end of the year fundraising, which is still in going full throttle. And so, I think if there were one thing to, or a few things I'd focus on would be definitely networking, mm-hmm. definitely developing your own mentoring group to help you develop best practices, because there's no point in reinventing the wheel. And in terms of social media, you have to be really accessible and have the platforms where you can easily generate that income. And particularly with our Facebook community, our community members do Facebook birthday fundraisers, which has been a wonderful area of support. And then our chapters fundraise individually, and we just are so grateful for them as well as our partners. We have some really, really wonderful partners who continually support us year after year. And we also do a lot of research where we vet out non-invasive fibroid research studies. And we've been fortunate enough to partner with some wonderful medical institutions worldwide, and we generate some income from that as well. So it's, many different areas where we source our funds in order to continue to thrive.
So for the social media part, because you mentioned the Giving Tuesday, are you finding more that social media will raise the funds as opposed to, there's many organizations that will say, well, social media is great for brand awareness of our organization, but it really hasn't helped so much in our funding. What would you say to that?
I think social media has been very pivotal in us raising funds. We have partners who I'd say provide the lion's share of our annual funding. But our community is just fantastic in providing a great, consistent funding source for many of the programs, to support many of the programs that we do. When I first started, social media wasn't really yielding results, but that was because I didn't have the platforms in place. And now that we've implemented more of those platforms and have had a consistent presence on social media and grown tremendously, it is yielding results.
Right. It doesn't happen overnight. You have to stick with it. You know, you mentioned that consistency is really important. So, Terry, what does success feel like at the end of the day? And maybe how would you also describe what long-term success looks like?
You know what? This year has just been incredibly gratifying. And when you ask me what success looks like, I'll give you an example. We had our fibroid talk in New York, where we hosted a fibroid talk with Columbia Medical Center. And we had been up for days planning, and there's so many components that go into an event. And so I arrived at the event on maybe 2 hours of sleep, and people started arriving, and a woman came, got off the elevator and came. We were receiving people there, and she told me about how she didn't have any family locally, and she got sick with fibroids, and they left her on a gurney in the hallway while she was bleeding out at the hospital.
Oh, that's terrible. What a sad story.
Yeah, and then they rushed her into surgery, and she was terrified. And we just hugged each other. You know, just, and she was like, I didn't know about your organization. And it's, you know, you could just tell that she needed, and we needed, to just be together. You know, it's that bond, it's that sisterhood. And so at the end of the day, being able to help a woman who is in distress to find the support that she needs, or as in this instance, just be a compassionate ear, it just really, for them, and probably more than they know for me, it's just really gratifying. Because when I started this group, people thought I was crazy. Like, how are you going to have a fibroids organization, and who's going to contribute to that? You're going to leave your job, and what? You know, the naysayers.
A lot of resistance.
Like, oh my goodness. And
there's a challenge as a social entrepreneur.
Exactly.
Resistance.
So, yes. And so to be here and to actually interact with someone who may be on the other side of the world who says, thank you, I didn't know that. You made me feel so much better. Like, I'm at night, sometimes I jump on our social media feed and I'm talking to people. They could be any place, but to be able to provide that comfort makes me just, it's just why I'm here. And it's really, really meaningful to be able to do that. And this journey in terms of long-term success, I try to be really open, because this journey is one that is evolving, and I'm just prayerful that it's going to yield more good than I could have ever imagined. And I hesitate to define what that might look like, but to just keep moving forward on a path of following my heart and trying to do good, and I'll see what that yields.
Well, your heart is certainly in the right place. You mentioned, you know, you're welcome, how social media, you know, you're on your feet at night. Would you say that you do more social media for your organization, or as a founder, you personally are out there on social media?
It's definitely the organization. Yeah. I mean, I post on social media from time to time, but most of my posts are related to our foundation efforts. Absolutely. That's kind of taken over. In fact, the foundation is the reason that I developed a Facebook account, which is kind of funny, but yeah.
Well, it's great to hear that it's taken off. And I mean, anything on social media, it's 24/7. It always needs to be tended to, right? You need resources in place. Yeah. Before you mention your mom, mm-hmm. And I was going to ask a question about who influenced you the most and why. So I know your mom seems like a big influencer. You want to share more about her? Is there anybody else who influenced you along this journey?
You know, it's interesting. My mom let me be me, and I'm grateful for that. And she'll tell you, she's like, she's actually said this within the past few weeks. I don't know where you came from, but I'm just letting you do you, because when I say things, she's like, she just shakes her head, but she, you know, she's never inhibited me. But, when you ask me that question, the person that comes to mind, is my Uncle Lee. His name was K. Leroy Irvis, and, he's an adopted uncle, but he was pivotal in my life, and especially during college. And I lived with he and his wife when I graduated from college. And he's the first person who really understood me. And because I've always been a dreamer, and sometimes I was ostracized for my big dreams, or people just didn't understand them. And he got it. He got it. He got me. And he let me know that he got me. And he was a dreamer, too. And he accomplished so many amazing things in his lifetime. He was the Speaker of the House of Pennsylvania. And he's just like an angel that touched my life. And a lot of times when I experience highs or lows in my career, I think about him. And I think about what would he do, or what would he say to me, or what advice would he give? And I look at his life as an example. And so I think more so than almost anyone that I've met, he has really been a father to me and a mentor. And even though he passed away in 2006, has left just such a huge, wonderful impression on my life. And so I think of him when you ask that question.
Well, he sounds like an amazing person for so many reasons. And, you know, there aren't too many people who come into our lives where you can actually say, this person gets me. Mm-hmm. So when you find somebody like that, that just, that's a wonderful person and feeling and confidant and someone you just know you can rely on and trust. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. I would love it if you could give some parting advice to our listeners out there, maybe who want to become social entrepreneurs and mm-hmm. who really want to make a difference in this world.
Mm-hmm. I think that the key to that is to follow your natural inclinations and to devote specific and consistent energy to those interests on a regular basis, and they will grow. I guess the short term for that is follow your bliss, because I think that we all have just a special presence and energy to bring to the world, and beautiful things unfold when we are not inhibited by what we see. There's an interesting quote that I always follow, and it's from Michael Bernard Beckwith, and he says, when you believe more in what you don't see than in what you do see, you won't see, and what you don't see, you will see.
That's an amazing quote.
And I think of that all the time when I'm sitting faced with something and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. Superior, how are you going to do this? And I try to remove the how. And because when people create something that has never been seen before, the only origin for that thought was their idea. And so it wasn't based on anything that they were currently looking at necessarily. And so we do have the ability to bring things into the world that have never been done before. And that, quote, helps to anchor me in that knowing.
Remove the how. Wonderful advice, Soteria. Thank you so much for all of your advice. It was wonderful. Maybe you could just share where people can find out more about you and your foundation.
Sure. So our website is fibroidfoundation.org, and that's F-I-B-R-O-I-D foundation.org. And Deirdre, thank you so much for the Women Worldwide platform and all of the work that you do. It's such a pleasure to now be part of your series of wonderful, just insightful interviews, and I'm grateful for this time with you today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, for everything that you've shared on fibroids, a really important topic, and it's something that women need to know, women and men need to know more about. So we so appreciate you educating us on what you're doing, and I know you'll keep in touch. Now you're in the Women Worldwide Network.
Absolutely.
So thank you for everything that you've shared. I also want to thank PrepDish for being the sponsor of this episode of Women Worldwide. And just a reminder to all you listeners, don't forget, you can get your free 2-week trial by going to prepdish.com/worldwide. And just thank all of you for tuning in today. You're spreading the word about Women Worldwide. We're receiving so many positive comments, and we love your feedback. So if you have a moment, please go and rate us on iTunes. Give us a shout out on Twitter and Facebook. We always love to hear from you. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.